from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Dan Hoyle, who is based here in San Francisco but travels the world, best known for his solo performances, which include the widely praised The Real Americans and Things They Happen. And he's known especially for the range of voices he creates and the humor and entertainment he provides. He now has a world premiere show all about human connection as well as the lack of human connection. It's called Each and Everything, directed by Charlie Veron and playing at The Marsh in San Francisco. And he joins us. Good to see you again. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Do you know the work of Anna Deavere Smith, who just left here?
I do, because my mom taught her when she was a lecturer at SF State. So I saw videotapes when I was a young kid of her earlier shows.
See, I know all about your dad's pedigree. I mean, I saw Geezer, and you know, he was with Pickle Circus the Pickle Family Circus, and also in The Lion King, and he has, you know, Zazu in The Lion King. Your mother, though, what, she's a teacher?
She was a lecturer at SF State for 20 years. Now she's a poet.
Lecturer in what department?
In English, she was.
Yeah, that's where I have taught many years, but I never had the privilege of meeting her. Though I think I did see some of her poetry. Anyway, enjoyed your show. I saw it Thursday evening with my daughter, and it's entertaining, it's engaging, it's thought-provoking, and congratulations on all that. Let me just say something for listeners. It starts out, and it's a good way to pique interest, of course, with an encounter with a ex-felon Aryan Brotherhood type guy in a small town in Nebraska, and it's a very kind of threatening, menacing moment. We don't know where you're going nor why you went with him, which you wind up doing, though we find that out, a little tease. How'd you come to meet this guy, or what were you doing in Nebraska in the first place?
I was doing my research of going around and getting people's stories. That was for a previous show, actually, but I brought it back for this show because it really prompted the question of he asked me, you know, why do you do this? And it brought me back this show to 2003 when I first graduated college in Northwestern. And I was in that vulnerable place we all are, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, and going to, you know, strange job interviews. And my friend Pratim would say to me, "Man, maybe you should stop listing freestyle rapping and Microsoft Word proficient as job skills on your resume. I mean, this is Chicago 2003, not Costa Rica 1999. And, you know, I was sort of...
This is when you were selling knives, steak knives. Yeah?
Exactly. I had... the interview I was able to get were for a steak knife salesman. And Pratim sort of is trying to say, "Man, I know lots of old Jewish ladies on North Shore who'd buy like 4 packs of knives if you just had lunch with them. They used to think I'm cute, but after 9/11, I had to cut my ponytail and nothing. And it took like 3 years to grow in Calcutta. But man, what do you want to do?" I say, "Well, I looked at joining the army, you know, they'd pay off my loans, could get some interesting stories." He says, "Man, killing brown people isn't that interesting, man. Lots of people do that, and there's only one Tim O'Brien." So the thing that I really want to do is go out and get stories from people outside my comfort zone. And in 2003 in Chicago, it's the corner boy drug dealers on my block.
Well, yeah, let's get a little of that, but get back to Pratim for a moment, because in your comfort zone, he's one of your closest friends, right? How does he feel about, you know, how you've reproduced him and replicated his voice and all?
Well, it's actually a pretty amazing journey, because I've never had a friend be a star of the show. And he actually came out and gave talkbacks for the first 3 previews. And for him, it was sort of an out-of-body experience to see intimate stories, moments reproduced on stage. And it was really incredible, I think, for the audience too, who always asked me, you know, "Have people that you portray or people that inspire, have they seen your work?" And you know, as I say, all my best subjects become collaborators. And so he's sort of on the stage with me as well.
Well, I imagine Coco, the Chicago street hustler, did not get to see this production or collaborate with you.
No. But Sino, who's another character I play, he does. I have been recently in touch with him. But to go back to my first breakthrough with the corner boy street hustlers, so I always had to, you know, get up my nerve to go out and talk to them. And finally I did. And Coco said,
"We've got to watch profanity here, really." So,
yes.
Okay.
I've edited it.
Excellent.
Coco finds me late at night and says, "What's up, Mo? What you need?" I'm Coco, but most people call me Don Dada. You want to do a play about us? Hold up. I think I seen you before. I think I seen you on the slave ship. See, they call me African American, but I do believe I got a little cream in my cafe. So I'm thinking maybe one late, late night, your great-great-granddaddy got all sweet up on my great-great-grandmama. And maybe I ain't forgot. But seeing you a gentleman, must have been he was too. So maybe we just really long lost cousins. And just like that, I was in.
Yeah, blood relation. Talking to Dan Hoyle and his play Each and Everything plays at the Marsh Theater in San Francisco through the 12th of July. His other one-man shows include The Real Americans and Things They Happen. He's the actor, he's the writer, and he's here with us in studio. And this whole journey of yours takes us into, as I said in my introduction, or maybe I said it in the billboard, actually, coffee shop in India and also streets of Chicago. I mean, there's a wide swath and panoply here. But also to a place, I didn't even know these places existed. Maybe they don't. Digital detox place?
Yeah, so the show then moves forward once I break through and have this moment of sort of understanding what it is I want to do and succeeding with going out and getting people's stories and connecting with people and then recreating it on stage and sort of creating this intense sort of secular humanist church that I feel that live theater can be when it's good. I then find, as we move forward in time, that all of a sudden we have all these screens and devices, and not only is my work in a way more difficult, because I go out and talk to people on the streets. I don't do as many sort of in studio interviews. I'm finding that there's this disconnect with this life on the screens. You're seeing people walking down the street, reading about the street they're walking down on their phone, like, oh, it says an interesting, colorful neighborhood with lots of fun characters. Cool, we totally did this neighborhood. I met this guy in New York, where I actually now live, and he says, he starts talking to me. He says, yeah, man, I'm an IT guy, man. When I work here at 30 Rock. So when I get off work, I try to come out here, I try to talk to people, man. People forget how, when it's just like the Facebook and the texting, it's not cool, man. It's not cool. I remember when I was a kid watching the Jetsons thinking, oh, wow, the year 2000 is going to be flying cars. Yeah. Yeah. Yo, what was the name of the Hispanic guy in the Jetsons? Yeah, no, there was no Hispanic guy in the Jetsons. Yeah, man, I used to worry as a little kid if cars start flying, man, all the Hispanic people are going to disappear, right? Man, growing up, it was rough, man, it was rough. But, at least there was community. Now it's like, where's the community? Facebook, man, don't get me started on Facebook, man. Man, I lost my wife on Facebook. I wasn't even on it, man. My kids had an account. My wife had an account. My son had to tell me, Pops, you got to check this out. My wife reconnected with an old boyfriend on Facebook, and it looked bad, but I had to catch her. So I've been watching a lot of that reality TV show, Cheaters, whatever, and I thought it would be easy. So, I got to the house, and I caught her, and, man, it was, too real, I'm wishing there was some bright lights and cameras, somebody to try to sell me some toothpaste, but just your life, it doesn't start happening. Yeah, man, that's the worst part, man. Now I'm on Facebook, and all these people from the past are like, hey, Manny, how's it going? Your family looks great. I'm like, thanks. So glad we can catch up. I haven't really catch up because my life's a nightmare, But it's supposed to be, positive news. Nobody likes negative news. Yeah, I mean, some people do, man. I'm trying to face my problems, not Facebook my problems. And it's like everybody's connected, but we're not really connecting,
There's the heart of what you wanted to communicate and why people go to digital detox and so forth. Did you ever get any flack, though, about, political incorrectness of doing black, brown, Indian people and assuming those identities? And
I feel like the proof is in the pudding, and I feel like I am honoring and taking on the privilege of playing them. And, I feel like we live in a world now where I don't want, you know, black or brown people to not be able to play white people, or women to not be able to play men. And, you know, as Nora Ziel Hurston always said, you have to go there and know there. And I go there.
One of my favorite quotes of hers from Their Eyes Are Watching God. We're talking again with Dan Hoyle. You can go here, actually. Let me give the phone number and welcome you to the program if you'd like to join us. In fact, if you've seen Dan Hoyle's work, or if you have some thoughts about what you've heard, feel free to join the program now. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we welcome your phone calls. Number 866-733-6786. Feel free to call us now. Again, it's toll-free at 866-733-6786. Or you can email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. Each and everything is going to be playing at the Mars Theater in San Francisco through the 12th of July, and Dan Hoyle here. So you actually did go to a digital detox place?
I did. So I found out that this is where it's headed, and it was actually kind of amazing. You're surrounded by all these people who are kind of saying enough is enough, and a lot of them are in tech. This one guy's said, it's not hard for me to sign off digital. Actually, I signed off on 4 business deals today for my phone. That's why I signed off digital. I just hear like metal grinding and electronic noise in my head because I'm always on. I'm always working. I grew up poor on a farm, so if I stop working, I'll just be poor again. So I just like work. I mean, I don't really live anywhere. Well, my stuff's in a storage container. My stuff was like 20 white V-neck T-shirts, a snowboard, and a skateboard. So really, I'm homeless. But I was waiting to get coffee the other day, and I realized like all 12 people online were staring at their phones. So I start like texting my girlfriend to tell her, and then I realize now I'm staring at my phone, and it hits me. What if everyone is talking about everyone else, but no one's saying anything to anyone? And so there's kind of people are I think, in realizing, whoa, what has happened? And I think part of what is the real pleasure of the show is we're all thinking this, you know, and to be able to come into a room together and sort of have this transmission, it feels kind of spiritual. It feels like we're renewing sort of the human bond, the human connection.
You get the sense, though, that, for one thing, you kind of cartoon these people. I mean, they're funny, and you should cartoon them because there's a lot of material there that you can have fun with. But the one who comes off to some extent the most cartoonish, if I can use that word, is the leader, who uses the word awesome in almost every other sentence and who is, you know, trying to get people to detox to get more in touch with their being grounded in spirituality.
Well, I would actually push back against the word cartoon. I feel like what one of the challenges is portraying this place that is very sort of intimate to people who aren't there. But when you're in the digital detox, as I say, you know, it was actually really amazing. You know,
you were really connecting with people.
We were completely connecting, and I think, you know, there's the in that scene you sort of meet people at first blush, and I think you maybe at first feel like they're a bit caricatured, but then they come back and you realize, no, we're seeing them in us, or we're seeing ourselves in them, I think.
That's what you want to get at as a playwright, as a writer. You want to get those universal traits that people can identify with and feel as part of them?
Yes.
Empathize with?
Yes. You know, I mean, I think empathy is you know, people talk about this radical empathy, and it can get taken too far, certainly. But I think one of the things that's happening now is public space is we're sort of losing it because we have the ability to escape into our screens at any time. And, you know, it's not like before we had smartphones, every time we were waiting for a bus, we'd strike up an amazing conversation. But we did sometimes, and also just looking around and seeing people and making some eye contact and sort of being present to, oh, okay, this is public space. This is one of the few times now, really, where we're gonna meet people sort of outside of our comfort zone. You know, I think that's worth continuing.
What makes you, though, as a performer, want to inhabit other people? Because that's really what you do.
Well, I think part of it is that there's so many sort of interesting people out there. And I think for me, when I'm able to inhabit them, I'm able to give the gift that they gave me back to an audience. You know, not everyone has the time and the propensity to go out and sort of talk to strangers and to hopscotch around the world. Thank you, grant funders. So I'm able to sort of, and that's that moment I had with Prateem when I sort of figure out what it is, what I want to do. You know, he says, you know, man, I'm worrying, how am I going to get a job? And he says, man, if this is job counseling, you're the easiest client. You have a job. It's a weird job, but man, you're really weird.
So you feel these people give to you, even, you know, that ex-felon who at one point says, well, you understand me, right? I mean, they, you listen to them, and yet they give the gift to you of giving their story.
I mean, people want to be understood, and I think a lot of people aren't. And I think it's one thing to be understood by your intimate circle, and it's another thing, and I think it's a very powerful thing to be understood and connected with a stranger. And that is something that I've experienced a lot in my life. And it's kind of this triumph of humanity when, you know, there's a lot of distrust of strangers. But when you're able to come together and have that moment of connection and somebody shares their story with you without any pre-introduction, you know, to me that can be a pretty profound moment. So and then theater is the perfect medium for that.
It is the vehicle. And again, we're talking to Dan Hoyle, and if you may want to join this conversation or have some response to what you've just heard about the lack of connection and how important it is to make connections with people and actually to hear their stories and to empathize with them and really feel some kind of humanity coursing back and forth and exchanging not necessarily bodily fluids, but some kind of at least mental and cognitive, even emotional fluids. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, or you can email us forum@kqed.org. Can you take us a little bit into that Calcutta Coffee House?
Yeah, so after I get back from the detox, you know, it's not perfect. And I'm saying that, you know, there is sort of this way in which digital detox can be sort of this backlash into this sort of consumer nostalgia for authenticity. And Prateem says, why don't you go to India, man? It's like the internet in real life. And so I go to Calcutta, Prateem's birth city, and there's this place called Indian Coffee House, which people tell me I have to go to. And it's this old Victorian building with these sort of impossibly high ceilings and dozens or scores of tables and no music. And this just the sound of chatter is filtering up into the ceilings and the whir of fans. And people gather there and they just have this sort of pedagogy, this mythology of just gathering for conversation. And I sort of get in with a group of thinkers there, and he says, once in a day, you must practice thinking with others. Otherwise, you cannot conform your existence. We come here to chat with others and in some godly way to chat with ourselves. That's just it. Dan, man, I'm a so-called computer guy. I have my master's in computer systems, whatever that means. But here, we allow our minds to be idle. Yeah, it's like actually idleness for creativity's sake. Like, the clock-based society is actually relatively new. Like, even in West up till 19th century and advent of factory time, most people looked at the sun to tell time. So the notion that we are wasting time by sitting idle is very new in the human experience. Dan, man, if you can't have empty mind, you can't have good thoughts. So when you come to Coffee House, first just sit, empty the mind. Then think. Then if anything comes, you talk.
Stan Hoyle performing a small sample of his new play, Each and Everything, which has its world premiere at the Marsh Theater in San Francisco and is playing there through the 12th of July. His other one-man shows, which some of you may be familiar with, I suspect many are, The Real Americans and Things They Happen. Here's a listener who writes, Each and Everything is a hauntingly beautiful and incredibly honest theater piece by a brilliant artist. Dan Hoyle honors each and every person he encounters and every story he shares. I highly recommend seeing the show. I saw it once during previews, and I will absolutely see it again.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I recommend it too. I was there Thursday night, as I said, and really, it's really entertaining and enjoying. You even pick up the guitar. Song's a little long, by the way, but I didn't know you were a guitar player.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different songs. That one is the one that is the newest. There is also the R&B ballad to Newspapers, and then the rap Phone Zombies. You know, one of the great things about solo shows is that you actually do get to work with other people. I've worked with Mars Today, who created some of the music. Of course, Charlie Varon, my collaborator and director. For 10 years. Maureen Towey also helped in on this. And of course, Charlie, you know, he's performing his own show and is performing Feisty Old Jew, which is hilarious as well. So I get all these people and it becomes a production as opposed to just a seance.
You mentioned Grant before, getting grant money. Congratulations on that. That's helped keep you afloat. But one of the things I've always wondered about Marsh performers, I've never asked Charlie this. He's been on the show a number of times. You know, we're doing a program tomorrow on surviving in San Francisco on $33,000 or less a year for a family of four, or part of our Priced Out series. How do you survive if you're just a Marsh performer or Marsh director? I mean, it's a pretty small theater.
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky enough to tour my shows around the country. You know, The Real Americans went to like 10 different cities around the country. And I actually moved to New York last summer.
Happier there?
It's great. It's new inspiration. It's, you know, it's its own universe. And property prices, it's cheaper.
Yeah, I know. Astonishingly enough, but the fact of the matter is, you've had a couple of hits, and you know, you've had good fortune, so to speak, but also good fortune well deserved. Let me get a caller calling from Los Angeles. Tanker, good morning. You're on.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going. Join us.
Good. I just wanted to ask Dan what his perspective on Google Glass was, and sort of the invasion of privacy related to that, and how that ties into these themes that he's addressing his new show.
Yeah, so, you know, every time I come back to San Francisco and walk down Valencia, I'm sort of have my mind blown. And we started to see them. I mean, The Daily Show had a pretty amazing little snippet on it. But I think one of the wild things for me is, as someone who went to school and had to study how we get permission, who's somebody who takes people's stories very seriously and being able to interact with people and take their sort of essence is very, very sort of sacred endeavor, to see that now the new normal is becoming, oh, you can record people anytime without asking them, is just like so shocking and
invasive.
And I think the thing that I hope my work is able to speak to is that when you get permission, when you spend the time with people, you get better material than just sort of pointing your Google Glass and surreptitiously filming them. And I think we're really we want something that is beyond surface level. And I think that I hope that my work can give people that charge.
And we thank you for the call, and you know, the San Jose Rep closing. Some thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's very, very sad, especially because the play that Tony Taccone and I wrote, just that was the last production that finished its run, Game On. It was a pleasure working there. You know, I think that we're going to – I think that people want – to have live experiences. You know, I binge watch shows. I listen to podcasts. We go through a week and we have so many entertainment platforms to kind of keep us going. And yet there's a way in which it doesn't quite provide us with the experience that something live can happen. And I think the funny thing, people, I think of theater as being kind of, you do it every night, but really it's the ultimate interactive experience. You know, the audience, especially when I'm doing a solo show, the audience is the other actor.
There was an Indian woman at the production and I saw, and she was actually quite luminous in her smiles, just, you know, when you were doing Fatim and some of these Indians in Calcutta and so forth. But you mentioned Tony Taccone, and you've got the Marsh in Berkeley now. You've got the Berkeley Repertory Theater there. I know Brian Copeland's now performing his one-man show at the Marsh, Not a Genuine Black Man. Marsh in your future?
Yeah, it's a great place to create work, you know.
Berkeley Rep in your future is what I meant to say, though.
Not necessarily. Oh yeah, sure. I've also played at Berkeley Rep. You know, the march I love because you're able to get in there and work it out. And the last two shows that I've done there have gone on to go to New York and tour around the country. So it's and the ticket prices are really accessible. It's very unpretentious. So it draws people that are both theater lovers and people that are just looking for something that is takes them out of their world for 75 minutes.
And props to Stephanie Wiseman. When I went in Thursday, she greeted me and it was nice to see her after all these years. Still playing a pretty active role, isn't she?
It's amazing what Stephanie has been able to do, and the Marsh has been able to continue operating in this hyper-inflated housing environment. The Marsh has been there for 25 years. And yeah, kudos to the Marsh.
So this is going to be running through July 12th, and then what?
Then I will go back to New York and hopefully put it
apply for
there.
Another Fulbright.
Would
you go back to Nigeria? By the way,
I mean, yeah, I'd love to go back.
Things are getting pretty hot there.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. You know, I went back there in 2009 and performed Things They Happen there and reconnected with one of the main characters there, and he's since from a TV interview he did on Nigerian television, he got hooked up with a Nigerian senator who's now paying for his college in Ghana. Mm. So, you know, there's a interesting way in which the process also has interesting impact as well as the product.
U.S. plays Ghana today in soccer.
Exactly.
It's a
I'll be there.
Big opening game. Again, I saw Each and Everything and would recommend it. If you have a chance, please do go see it. It's playing at the Marsh Theater in San Francisco through July 12th. It once again puts Dan Hoyle's brilliance on display. How much – we got seconds left here. How much did Northwestern help you? I mean, it's known as one of the top theater type of schools in the country.
It was a wonderful place to be able to develop my craft, and the streets of Chicago gave me the place where I cut my teeth and sharpened my tools.
Well, continued success. Congratulations on the new production, and thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael.
Dan Hoyle, Each and Everything. We're here with you each and every weekday, Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Want to give out our thanks to those behind the scenes. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our producers are Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Engineer today is Jim Bennett. And I remind you, you can always continue discussing this or any other program online by going to kqed.org/forum. And you can also let us know what you think about what you hear by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Thanks for being a part of this morning's program. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.